On this episode of Penny's Going In Raw, we discuss a plethora of things. We go over Clove, Bitcoin, Coinbase, This Week in the Market, and much more. Strap in.
Hey, yo, check 1, 2. This is Flavor Flav in the building for the Atlas crew.
Atlas Trading, what the fuck is up?
They're traders, they're prodigies, and then there's legends.
Rob, 4%, baby.
No way.
4%
Buy the fucking dip.
Hey, who told me about IDEX?
Like, dude, what the fuck? Like, someone just made, like, a lot more money than me on my trade.
You find out. Life's this game of pennies.
Did you check the portfolio?
Pennies. The margin for error is so small.
I bet Warren Buffett never did that.
And they out here making money right now off of penny stocks.
The two guys is putting in work to make y'all rich.
The pennies we need are everywhere around us.
It's time to think big.
Pennies going in raw.
Featuring Dan, Deity of Dips.
And Hugh Honey.
Produced by Vinny Strokes, baby.
This episode is brought to you by Benzinga. Benzinga is our absolute favorite resource to use when we trade. We use it for news scanners. We use it for float checkers. We use it for stock screening. We use it for just about everything, including chat rooms and much, much more. But that's not all they have. They have YouTube as well. Hot Stocks Luke every single day has great guests on, ranging from Ripster to Mia Khalifa to Gary to all the best guests you need to hear from every single day, all day long. So make sure to go check that out. That's youtube.com/Benzinga. And if you look in the replies to this tweet, you will see how to get a discount code for Benzinga Pro. Make sure to go sign up for Benzinga Pro right now. Welcome back to another episode of Penny's Going In Raw. Today is Sunday, April the 18th. And, you know, just before we even get into this week in the market, I think what we just saw last night, Bitcoin having a 14-15% drop. I know we talked about it on Wednesday, expecting a pullback, but we did see it hit 65,000, like we mentioned. Or maybe 64, and it kind of hit like a hard resistance. Coinbase, that direct listing didn't go great price-wise. And then, you know, we just saw Bitcoin kind of hit that 60, broke through that, and now it's sitting around that 55 mark.
Yeah, so we'll talk about Coinbase in a little bit because that's a whole other debacle. But as far as Bitcoin goes, last night someone sold 7.6 billion in a few trades. So I think the market cap at its highest was 2 trillion on Bitcoin. That's not a huge number. You know, 7.6 billion, that's a pretty big number when we're talking about like the average person. But when you're talking about the market cap of Bitcoin, that's nothing. And it dropped, what did we say, 14%, 15%?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. So think about if something went on a run, and this is one of my issues, one of my biggest issues with Bitcoin is the whole supply and demand feature. I think there's a statistic out there that 30% of people that are considered Bitcoin whales have never actually sold any Bitcoins. So if we were to see an actual run on Bitcoin selling, I mean, think about what that would do to the price. I mean, this isn't, that's not a big nominal amount compared to the market cap. So could you imagine someone wanted to dump like, you know, if the market cap was hitting 2 trillion, could you imagine if someone wanted to dump like 200 billion or 100 billion? Like it would be back at like 25, 20, 30K. And that's one of my biggest issues with Bitcoin. That's what we're seeing. That's what we saw overnight.
Do you think we kind of see this? I haven't been paying too much attention to it. It is Sunday morning. We record pretty early. Do you think this just gets accumulated and, you know, starts soaking up in the 50s? Or can we see some 40s sometime soon? I know this isn't what people want to hear, but.
Well, see, if I'm a Bitcoin holder, which I'm not, I missed that boat completely. Jealous. But if I'm a Bitcoin holder, I have to ask myself, okay, when I look back at the drawdowns, you know, 2017, I think, what was it? It was like an 85% drawdown or something. When I look at the drawdowns, I need to ask myself, what were the drawdowns caused of? A lot of people think that Bitcoin's heavily manipulated because the whales own like 40% of it. And, you know, like most of Bitcoin is owned by just, you know, by a fraction of the population. So I think what we have to ask ourselves is that, was this a one-time liquidation by somebody that, let's call it, has a margin call, or somebody that just wanted to, you know, $7.6 billion in cash? And so the question we have to ask ourselves is that, is this going to be something where the whales let Bitcoin come back up and then they sell another 7 billion, come back up, sell another 7 billion? Or is this just a one-off buyable dip, get in at 55 and every other whale's holding? I think that's going to be the key here. There was also a report that came out that said that large institutions were going to get fined for laundering money through Bitcoin, which, so this all happened this weekend. So that was also what played into it.
Yeah, I saw, speaking of laundering money, I've read about people that NFTs could potentially be a good way to launder money. I mean, because you could buy them for, you know, whatever price someone says it's worth, and then you sell it again to your other drug dealing buddy or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's interesting.
No, it's interesting. But the question is that, will it hold its value?
Yeah.
Like if I'm, say I'm a cartel, or say I'm just some oiler who's dirty, and I buy something for 30 million, who says that's going to hold its value? That's the question.
They could make like, you know what I mean? They could make something that just in that community, it's just, it's known. This is an NFT for laundering money.
Yeah.
It's $15 million. You give us 15. You get 10 million and you can resell it for 10 million, clear money. You know, you get a little 30%.
Kind of like an underground world where you're like,
it's like a launder coin.
Remember when Wayfair, when there was like those reports coming out that it was like child trafficking or something, and it was like cabinets were going for sale for like $30,000.
It was like that. That was like a year ago or whatever, right? The thing. Yeah. Wasn't that mattresses or was it cabinets?
I think it was a little bit of everything, and so it could be, to your point, it could be something like that, to where like nobody's going to pay for a $30,000 mattress.
But if you know, you know.
Or nobody's going to. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. If you know, you know. But yeah. So I'll be interested to see. I think this week will be pivotal for Bitcoin.
Because one more
time. What'd I say?
Pivotable. I think that's a word, but just not for, that may not be a word. Pivotal is definitely the one.
Oh. I wish we finished college. We probably would have known.
I don't think they have like sixth grade English vocab lessons in like your senior year of college. So I don't think we missed that class. I think we just weren't paying attention enough earlier. But yeah, I think this next week is very important for it too, depending on how, if it bounces, if it starts to tank, that wouldn't be a good look, or continues a downtrend.
Yeah, it comes down to simple supply and demand. If they just start flooding the market with Bitcoins, I mean, this thing could, you know, backside of the trade comes 10 times faster. We could see 35 easily. At the same time, if people see this as a buyable dip, and there's like, you know, like, let's just call it like Chamath, okay? Like someone like that who's been a Bitcoin investor since 2013. If they see this as the low on Bitcoin for years, they could start buying up Bitcoins as well. So I think that this is kind of like that middle of the road, not sure if whales are going to start liquidating and we see 30,000 soon, or this is the last buyable dip before, you know, 75, 85, 100,000.
Well, if you haven't logged on Facebook in the past few days, you would have completely missed the fact that Dogecoin went absolutely nuts, over 100%. I think everyone on Facebook has like a crypto guy, is kind of like a weird guy in high school, but now he is all crypto. He's been telling you to buy crypto since 2014. Yes. You should have listened, but you know, we still make fun of all the crypto posts, right?
Yeah, he's secret 100 millionaire.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, honestly, the dude I'm referring to, because I'm actually referring to one, I think he has like 3/4 of one. But you know, whatever. It's not the point. He's making this money. But you know, he would tweet thing, you know, Dogecoin's up 120%. And he's like, take your profits, guys. You know, this ain't gonna stay up. Like, he's Facebook guru for cryptos for his 220 Facebook friends. It's great.
But then he's deadly accurate.
Yeah, he's a wizard.
Well,
man,
it's interesting that Dogecoin is going, because, so with Bitcoin, You can actually, I mean, I guess you, there's certain places you can buy Doge. I mean, you can buy with Doge, but like you can buy a Tesla with Bitcoin. You can't buy a Tesla with Doge.
And honestly, knowing Elon Musk, I wouldn't be surprised.
Probably one of these. I mean, he has to have like a billion Doge. He
says,
right?
Yeah. I mean, he says, this is also a long time ago. He said he only had like half a Bitcoin or no Bitcoin. I don't even remember.
But
but then he bought like a half or $1 billion worth of Tesla. So.
Yeah,
been on a good ride since then.
But I think it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people are comparing Bitcoin and Doge, like, you know, like Doge will be at 60K soon. The only difference is that Doge can be diluted forever. Like literally, you could just make Doge. So it's like, it comes down again to that supply and demand. If people start to just make Doges, I mean, I think there's 21 million Bitcoins or something out there.
I think 21 million is the max there can ever be after like 100 something years. I think right now it's like 18.5 million.
Okay. Yeah. So the supply and demand is super small. You know, I don't even know how many Bitcoins that is over the next 100 years.
I think one of the big things is there is not enough. What is it, fucking Bitcoins for every millionaire to have or some bullshit like that?
Okay.
Which doesn't seem right. 21 million.
Well, no. There's, but I get what you're saying. But with Doge, I mean, I could literally just sit here. And if I knew how to make Doge, I mean, I could just sit here and make a billion fucking Doge tomorrow. With Bitcoin, you can't do that. So you can dilute Doge forever and ever and ever and ever, which essentially, you know, it's kind of like when we think about like currencies. I know that everyone talks about like the printer goes brr with the US economy and we talk about inflation. A lot of people say that Bitcoin really can't be inflated because you can't make more Bitcoins I'm not saying that right. But with Bitcoin, because there's a certain supply and you can't make more.
Yeah, there's a maximum amount.
Yeah, there's a maximum amount.
Yeah, so what I was trying to say a little bit ago is there are more millionaires than Bitcoins, approximately 35 million to 70 million millionaires.
That's a pretty big
range.
And
only a maximum of 21 million Bitcoin. Yeah, but I guess it's like, because you got to think, I feel like most people, middle class people are millionaires by the time they retire, you know, have like $2 million, they're probably like 60, maybe 1.5.
That I don't know. I there's statistics out there that 54% of people couldn't pay for a $1,300 emergency.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. But I feel like,
but I get what you're saying with assets and with retirements. I understand what you're saying is that with,
because I mean, you can't just retire. It's because if you run out of money, what the fuck are you going to do? You're just 90 and broke.
I mean, yeah, Social Security pays nothing. Yeah.
You can't just go be the Walmart greeter.
I think it's going to be one of those things where like, if I were invested in Doge, and I'm not, I really wish I was, one of our, Mr. Manziel has we had him on the stream on Monday. He has a friend who put $130 into Doge at 0.001 and it's now worth 38K.
I saw somewhere that said if you put in $10,000 into Dogecoin on January 1st, it would have been worth over $500,000.
Yeah, it's so insane. So that guy, he liquidated for like $37,000 profit or like 380,000%, something like that. And so he's just going to pay off his truck. And like, I think that that's an awesome scenario. But if I was a Dogecoin holder, I would at least take some off the table because, again, we're talking about supply and demand here. If they just start diluting the hell out of Doge, they can just dilute it down to nothing. And right now, it has so much hype around it. You know, you have Elon Musk, Mark Cuban, everybody pumping it. Everybody loves Doge. But when the music stops, you know, make sure that you at least have a chair somewhere because, again, the backside can come overnight.
One thing I like to think about is that Doge, that picture of that blonde dog was like just posted on like 4chan or just some random ass message board in like 2008. You know, he probably thought it was crazy that the picture went viral and became a funny meme with the, you know, much happy, you know, much whatever. The stupid ass meme is. And now he's probably looking like, no way. The market cap of a picture of my dog turned into a cryptocurrency is $30 billion.
It's so insane.
Do you just go, hey, man, can I get money off of this picture? I mean, my dog, he's been dead for like 4 years now, Sparky. But, you know, I really, there's a market cap of $30 billion off of Sparky's face. Can I get a piece?
I mean, there's probably like a short film that would be made about it. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if I saw a short, they make short films about everything nowadays.
Yeah, speaking of which, go check out GameStop, The Wall Street Hijack on Discovery Plus.
Our boy Dan, it was narrated by Wolf of Wall Street himself.
Yeah, narrated by Jordan Belfort.
That is so cool, man. That huge congratulations. I watched it.
Thanks. It was sweet.
And also you were articulated as fuck. I mean, you sounded like, you know.
Yeah. You know how much I was waving my hands around? I didn't know how much, dude, I moved my arms.
No,
around.
Dude, it was good. It was a nice like you were
some
into
energy
it.
To the room.
Yeah, no, I liked it. I really hell, seriously, yeah. That was awesome.
And, all right, yeah, but yeah, no, it was fun being in it. So go check that shit out.
And moving on. I wanted to talk about Coinbase because that was a huge highlight this week, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We talked about it, but the difference between, we talked about it on Twitter, but the difference between traditional IPOs, lockup period, versus direct listing, okay? Basically, insiders can just sell all their shares onto the market. And that's essentially what happened. I went through the filings and essentially hundreds of millions of dollars was just dumped by the insiders onto the market the same day that they IPO'd, like within minutes. Like the second that they started trading, hundreds of millions, within 10 minutes, hundreds of millions was being dumped onto the market. And I personally think that's pretty, I don't want to say scummy because that's not the right word, because, you know, take your money, that's cool. But I think that there should be some kind of regulation or some kind of like, hey, listen, you can't hype up your stock and your company and say, hey, I'm not going to sell, and then dump $200 million onto the market. Like,
so this is kind of like someone investing in Uber to the two guys that made it.
Yeah.
Like in 2010, giving those dudes $200,000 and then they have 5% of the shares. And then they're just able to sell that at this crazy high price is basically what happened.
Yeah, and so what they're saying, this is basically what they're saying. They went on all these major news networks and they're like, we're the best, you know, we have great revenue, you know, we are the concrete of the crypto wallets, you know, things of that nature. And they were like, I'm never selling my shares, you know, we're gonna be worth trillions and trillions and trillions. And then they got direct listed and they just dumped like $200-300 million. Listen, you can take profits as an owner. I would take some profits, but you're going to tell me that you're going to sell all or, you know, a majority as an insider, like the CFO, you know, sold like 70% of his shares. You're going to sell 70% of your holdings for hundreds of millions of dollars 2 days after going on and saying, hey, like we're going to be the face of Bitcoin wallet. Like we are going to be worth trillions of dollars and then just dump like $250 million worth. Like that's, there's got to be some kind of regulation into that. I'm not a fan of that. I think that's so scummy.
So the difference kind of with direct listings and IPO besides that. So with an IPO, are they just not allowed to sell them?
Well, so there's a lockup period. So a lot of times there will be a lockup period and then they'll also extend their lockup period. So the first one that comes to mind is HYLN. The founder, when it was at $60 a share, HYLN, he would have been worth, I think, like $30 billion or something. And since then, the price has dropped to sub 10 and now he's worth like nothing. But because he had the lockup period and then he extended the lockup period to give investors confidence, he can't even sell for like 2 years from now, which is crazy because, I mean, the difference in net worth between 60 and 9 is incredible.
Well, I guess kind of moving on from Coinbase, with other things that went on in the market this week, well, I mean, we're 417, 418 on SPY. We are actually starting to see some runners, too. I mean, the Clove fiasco on Friday was interesting. I know I made some money off of Clove. It was an interesting little saga for Clove with people in the morning saying, oh, it's 120% short float. And it had like a solid run. And then it seemed like people were saying, no, it doesn't. And the stock kind of reacted to that. And then it seemed later in the day there was confirmation. I wouldn't be surprised if more news about that came or more facts and that one could end up, you know, continuing to run. I mean, the market's been wanting some to run. People like Clove. Wall Street Bets likes Clove. Twitter likes Clove. So, and, you know, it's oversold as well.
Yeah, so I saw a lot of people talking about the 120% short on Clove, and I even had people tweeting at me, and that it was 120% short. The way that there's two resources that I like to use. One being shortsqueeze.com. In my opinion, they're one of the most accurate. You don't need a subscription. You literally just type in the ticker and it'll tell you. That's one thing that I love. And then I also like FinViz. So if both of those match up, I feel confident that I know what the short float percentage is. And on Clove, I think it was more like 18% or something, or 12% was the actual, it was 12.5% was the actual amount. And Clove had someone bought, I think it was 1.7 million shares at around 10:30 a.m. So that kind of sets off scanners. That sets off.
Hey, Zach.
Yeah. And so that sets off scanners. That sets off, you know, volume scanners and algorithms, stuff of that nature, whatever algorithms are on. And that's what really started this little squeeze. And then it came out that where the dump came was that someone that tracks the float, a Twitter account that tracks the float, came out and said that mysteriously one of the insiders' shares were just erased. Like they were kind of like, they were like kind of hinting at fraud. Like they had just, you know, kind of taken the shares away. And then it came out right at the end of the day, it came out that actually that they weren't tracking the right information. And that actually wasn't true, and that they were going to update the information by Monday. And so inside that last little bit, it had seen like a dollar pop after that information came out. So it had gone from 7:23 to the tip being 10:03. And then on that information, it had gone all the way back down to 8:50. And then by the end of the day, it kind of ended like, you know, above nine-ish. So a lot going on with Clove on Friday. I mean, but, you know, we had someone buying huge shares, you know, tipping off scanners. But the thing that I will say is that it's not like it's wonderful that Clove went from 7 to 10. But the more beautiful thing is that it took about 9:30 to 12:30 for it to reach its peak. And what that means is that it wasn't just a pop and drop.
Yeah, and there it was, volume in the market was just dead this week. And it finally, it seemed like Friday there was life. Clove, you know, started showing, you know, that was the first sign of life. And I'm not sure if this was Thursday or Friday after hours, but one of the first 100% runners was it, I think MTSL, I think it was one of Ultra's plays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw him mentioning it and I saw it go, I think 98, 99%. I'm not sure if it crossed the 100 mark, but who cares?
Yeah.
Is that enough? I mean, it seemed like Friday was a, you know, we got the spark plugs on.
Yeah, no. So it's unfortunately, it isn't enough. It actually went from 285 to 66. That's fantastic, but it is a super low float and it really didn't hold its gains. It had tried to come back. It tried to crawl back. Overnight, it had gone from 66 to about 4. Then it had tried to pop back up and it failed and kind of faded off. It's one of those things where it's encouraging, but we can't sit here and say pennies are back. And so what we would have seen, now that being said, if it had come down to that 450 range and then it had squeezed out to like 7, 8, then we would be having a different conversation. But at the same token, it's something where we can be encouraged by this because it's not just straight up and pop and drop. It, you know, it had at least tried to curl up. You know, it's going to come where one of these does curl back up, squeeze, and we have like 1,000% runner like that. And I think we're close to that. I think we're seeing max pain. There's 70 stocks underneath a dollar now, which that's crazy how the fluctuation that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're close. I think we're seeing max pain. The other thing that I like to, and we tweeted about this, was that when retail flips short, that's usually a sign that we're close, because it's like one of those things where like longs are sad, longs get bagged, longs are down huge. Then they're like, you know, fuck it, I might as well switch short to the short side. And then all of a sudden, you know, that's when they get squeezed super hard. And so it's like one of those things where max pain, flip short, get squeezed, and then they're done with the market.
Yeah, another reason I was really hoping for the Clove run, because I feel like so many of these SPACs are at this, you know, really comfortable spot. They're like 760. And just 2 months ago, if a SPAC was below 10, it's a guaranteed buy, you know?
Yeah.
So we're seeing those. And that was one of the main things I was really excited about. I was really hoping to put a lot of money back in UWMC and lots and stuff like that. But, you know, when it took the downtrend, it was just, well, I guess I'll keep waiting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because all lots, UWMC and Clove were all $7.30 the same day, which is like, how crazy is that? I mean, those were kind of like the big three and they were all the same price, different valuations, but same price on the same day. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things where it just seemed like it was just the perfect opportunity that they were about to just reverse. But we'll have to wait another week and see.
We could be here next week saying that we had that 1,000% runner and cautiously saying that pennies are back. You know, I don't want to jinx it, but I think we're close.
Yeah. One thing I think is nice. I mean, we see it happen, you know, probably, I think we saw it happen around August as well, probably around twice a year, how all of these small caps are down 50, 60%. And what happens right after that super hot market, you know, the Januaries, the Decembers, and a little bit of February, that's where most people were tripling their accounts again for the first time since last March or last summer almost.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them do deserve to be down this much. Like BNGO has no case for being at $15 a share. BNGO is not worth $2 a share. And right now it's sitting at about $5 a share. I'm not saying that it'll go to $2, but it has no reason to be up at $15 a share. So when we see the entire penny stock, you know, small cap market just fly, dollar stocks go to 15, you know, we need to see this drawdown. But I think that we're close to that because most stocks that we've seen, as you said, are down 60, 70%. And now what we're going to see is that we're going to see stocks. Now, most of them have a lot of cash because what were they doing when they were all super high? They were dropping offerings, or at least the smart ones were dropping offerings. So now they have cash. And now that they're getting close, some of them are getting really close to being at the same market cap as they have in cash or close to it. And that's a really good sign because that usually signifies that, you know, that's a pretty good deal, or that's at least, you know, if the management isn't crooked, you know, that's a pretty good deal.
I kind of noticed people saying, you know, when I first started about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, when SPY is not hot, you know, that's good for pennies. Right now, SPY is super hot. And, you know, that seems to be the case. I kind of started disregarding that statement, you know, last summer when, you know, SPY was going, penny stocks were going, you know, everything's gravy. But are we going to need to see SPY start to drop for the pennies to start to run? Like, are Tesla, Apple, and everything going to be tanking while we're banking?
So,
I didn't mean to rhyme.
No, it was good. I liked it. In April, so before April, the average SPY volume day was about 100 million, right around there. In April, we've only had one day, which was Friday, which was over 65 million. And Friday we had about 82 million. So it was,
it's weird
still,
how you can feel it. You don't even have to check. You can feel the volume almost.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think it was like 2 weeks ago, we had like an under 50 million share day or volume day on SPY. And I was like, what the hell is this? This is just like a slow churn up, you know, on SPY, you know, on almost no volume, you know, on half the daily average volume. So one Friday, we saw really good volume. It was about 82 million. I still would like to see SPY hold up on a over like 100, like if SPY had like 120 mil vol day and SPY was like super green and was still running, that would be fantastic. But one of the things that I'm cautious about is that when you don't have, you know, let's call it like we had like 6 or 7 days of 60 mil volume. 6 or 7 days of 60 mil volume with SPY going 2 to 3%. That means that 120 mil vol day could take SPY down, you know, a good bit. You know, it's kind of like when you're cutting with a butter knife versus when you're cutting with like a steak knife. When we see low volume churn up, any kind of volume to the downside could cut through it easily because there's just no volume to cut through.
Well, I guess as it seems like we might be, we're seeing some light at the end of this dark, dark tunnel. We haven't had service on our phones in what seems like 60 miles. It probably would have been better had we not had any service and weren't able to check our portfolios, if I'm being completely honest. But as we are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel, how do you think we should go about playing the market? You know, it's going hot, you know? When the market was hot, it was a controversial statement when he said it. But I mean, remember how Gary said, you know, when the market's hot, this is how we're tripling our accounts. We're going all in. You know, we're risk it for the biscuit. Obviously, not in this market. But is it about time when we notice the volume come back? Is it time to go heavy?
So I was actually talking to a actually fantastic trader recently. And he was struggling because he felt like he's just been wasting his time. And I don't think we're there yet. I think we're like close, but I don't think we're there to where it's like, okay, time to start using all of your money again. I don't think we're there by any means. But he was getting really frustrated. And he was like, should I just take like 2 months off? And as someone who is, you know, if you've been in this game 10 plus years, then you know how the game works. But you've had plenty of screen time. You know, I think it's the saying goes, to master something, you have to do it for 10,000 hours.
10,000 hour rule. Yeah. 10,000 hours and you'll be master anything.
Yeah. And so I think that that's perfect for trading, is that if you are not inside this game for 10 years full time or something like that, then I think the worst possible thing that you can do is stop trading. Because what happens when you stop trading, it's like that muscle memory of like riding a bike. You don't want to get out of tune and you don't want to come back, because then it's like you're like relearning how to ride the bike. And so what I suggested to him was, is that we've been inside a compounding market for about a year. And what I said that I would do if I were inside his position is that keep your money in because the last thing that you want to do is take your money out, pennies get hot again, and then wait another 3 to 4 days, or which was, you know, about a week, for your money to transfer back. So what I suggested to him was keep your money in, you know, maybe wire some out for taxes and your estimated payment. And then what you want to do is that only use 10% of your account. And why you're doing that is that when you're using 10% of your account, is that you can really let trades work. Because worst case scenario, you know, let's just say that you have a stop on 10%, you're losing 1% of your account, even if you go all in. So what I suggested to him was that make your starter 1% of your account and your add another 1% of your account, and then let the trade work so that, you know, it's minimum risk. But if the trade works, you know, it works great. And instead of trying to compound your account, just trade for as much money as you need, whether that's 500 a week. You know, don't try and this guy had $180,000 a week and he was struggling to make $2,000 a week. And what I was saying was like, hey, dude, don't try and do that. You know, you gotta do what the market gives you. And the market's not giving you $180,000 a week. You know, it's not one of those things where like you can earn $180,000. Yeah, of course you could. But if the market conditions aren't there, don't try and force it. So only use 10% of your account max, wire out some money for taxes, and then let trades work. And then the other thing is that this is a fantastic time to really kind of rest your head a little bit. You know, if your parents want to take you out to dinner or take you out to lunch, do it. You know, you want to go have a mimosa in the morning? Yeah, do it. Because when stuff gets hot again and you're at the desk for 16, 17 hours, you're going to be wishing that you did. And so I think this is a perfect opportunity to really let trades work and also to enjoy life a little bit.
I've taken out a lot of positions there. I mean, this week was tough for me. I think this is definitely one of those weeks where I was like, shit, man.
Yeah.
But I positioned myself well for it to a point where if we weren't managing our risk very well, we would have lost an ass load of money these past 3 months or 2 months. So to anyone that's, if you lost 10% account, we say it all the time, you know, if you're up 40, or 400% and you lost 10, 15%, it's not that bad.
No.
So, you know, take the losses with a grain of salt. I mean, this is dog shit for small caps. Don't let people on Twitter say otherwise. I mean, I'll post like, you know, shaky, I'm just chilling today. You know, market looks shaky. People are like, oh, yeah, spot is up 800%. Like, yeah, okay. Well, I'm not buying Tesla. Okay.
Yeah, but, exactly. And so enjoy this time. I used to go through those periods where I wouldn't enjoy a slower cap market. And then when pennies got hot again, or the market got hot again, and I would get on this hot streak, I would then burn out because I was doing 20 hours a day. I mean, I'm still doing 16 hours a day right now, but I'm not at the desk, you know, 4 a.m. to 9 p.m. Like when the market's hot. And so, you know, if my cousin calls me, he's like, yo, you want to go grab like a peanut butter whiskey shot? I'm like, yeah. So enjoy this time, you know, live life a little. Do the things that you want to do now because, you know, get outside. It's beautiful up here in New Jersey, you know, Alabama, I'm sure it's nice, you know, and enjoy this because when the market gets hot again, it's balls to the walls. You know, we're the metal's to the pedal, baby. And I think that's my best advice is that let trades work, get better. $200 to $300 a day is still a lot of money. You know, that's a lot of money. So if you were that type of person that was making $10,000 a week, you know, scale back. Make $100 a day and go enjoy the day.
It's a stressful job sometimes, but one of the best part is we can take off whenever, as you know, most of everyone has made a lot of money in the past year. That's no shame in taking off a week, two, three, four, eight. So I mean, hey, I'm sure a ton of people listening right now saying if I would have taken the last 8 weeks off, my account would be a lot better. But obviously, 2020 hindsight, yeah.
But you
learn
from
it.
We can't
chase that imaginary number like Adelon says. So,
and if you're red, I think just real quick, if you're red on the year, dude, take it with a grain of salt. Okay, I had a terrible.
It's April.
Yeah, I mean, I had a terrible January. And one thing that I used to do is that my beginning of the year is usually really strong. I'm usually up, you know, when my account was smaller, I was usually up 600, 700% by July. And then inside that 6 week slow period of like July to August, you know, that 6 to really 10 week period, I would piss away like 60% of my profit. And then by the end of the year, I would be back to where I was at like June or July. And I was like, I should have just taken off, like I should just stop trading in June and I would be here. So, you know, take that for what
you want. And it comes with time too. Cause I mean, you don't just start trading and then 6 months later, just know the market isn't feeling right. I mean, it may not feel right, but you can still make money, but there's times where it doesn't feel right. And you know, this just isn't your market to trade.
Exactly.
And you know, sometimes the best trade is no trade at all. FOMO is a mofo, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, I saw another really good quote from some dude on Twitter. someone, you know, that guy that posted the Clove option gains.
Yeah.
And he said, I was up 200%, but the downside of the trade did happen faster. And he lost all his gains and was down 30% on the option, where he was just up 200% just hours ago. And someone responded and goes, if it's good enough to take a screenshot, it's good enough to take some profits.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that a lot.
I love that.
You know, if you're willing to screenshot and send it to your friends, man, take a picture. It lasts longer.
Exactly.
Take some profits. It'll last forever.
When I was first starting getting green, it was like $20. And I like sent my mom. I was like, yo, ma, $20, baby. You know, that Sunday's hoagie is on me. It wasn't. But my point is that, you know, as you get better and as your account compounds, so will the screenshots. Now it's like $20. Yeah, who cares? And that $20 screenshot will turn into a $200 screenshot. You know, so it's like one of those things where it's like, let your mindset and the way that you think about it, just go with your gut. You know, if you see green and you're like, oh, God, thank God I see green, take it. Who cares? You know, you're green. You made some money. You know, there's going to be a billion trades. If you do this for a long enough time, I mean, even me inside my short career, there's countless trades that I sit there and I'm like, oh, my God, if I held. And there's only one that sticks out. And that was a Tesla call option. And besides that, I can't even tell you another one. I can't.
Well, aside from all this boring stock stuff, we dropped some merch yesterday and you guys went absolutely bananas.
Oh, do we have the best listeners?
Yeah, no, I think we're definitely like top three.
Yeah.
$6,000 of the merch in 3 minutes. The merch is fire. Dope as hell. You're all going to get like hella dudes and girls depending on your preference. They're unisex. So, you know, whatever you want, they're going to be flooding you. And yeah, no, I mean, you guys went nuts. Our intern I think we're just going to call him our intern forever.
Yeah.
He's going to be our senior executive intern in like 10 years from now. He designed a good bit of it, designed the website, is handling it all. And no, we got a fire team. We got awesome listeners. And like, it's going to be awesome just repping PGIR in public and finally just seeing some people repping the gear.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome because I think a lot of people have been asking for this for a while. And I mean, at least me, like I had almost no hand. I mean, I'm not the creative of the four of us. I am the least creative, and it's awesome to see the three of you be so creative because it's like you guys create something. I'm like, whoa, that was like genius.
Yeah, no, it's super cool. I've always had like fucking weird ass ideas, but then it's like Christian can put them into visuals. Vinny's good at, you know, putting them into audio form, stuff like that.
Yeah. And I'm like, how the hell did you guys, I mean, I'm just sitting in the corner. Like, how the hell did you guys think of that? Cause I'm so number analytical, you know, minded that you guys think of like a slogan or something. I'm like, that was fucking genius. And I would never think of that. So, and you guys worked so hard on that shit. You know, and I mean, Christian, I mean, him and his buddies, shout out to them. You know, fantastic job, guys, and keep up the great work.
Yeah, and like they were on our very previous episode. Sorry, I'm on low sleep today. My voice is all over the place. My speech is terrible. My English is poor. But no, I mean, they were on our last episode, not the midweek, but the one before that. But yeah, no, the merch is insane. It's like all sold out. I think there may be like one or two shirts and some stickers left, and that's it. And no, I think we're going to start dropping merch more often, getting it out to you guys. And we'll be in beanies, hoodies, and PGIR'd out.
We have 5 shirts left. In total, we have 5 shirts left and a few stickers.
Yeah.
Wow.
So if you want a one size shirt, I think it's large.
Yeah.
And then if you retweet the PGIR thing, we got some exclusive merch. Should we tell them what it is?
Yeah, do it.
It wasn't for sale.
It wasn't.
Buy the effing dip mugs, baby. I don't even have one,
I don't have one.
I can't put it on screen. But no, we didn't want to mess up shipping because that would have made shipping a real pain in the ass. So we're just sending those out as little gifts to a few of you guys. So definitely check that out. And we've had a absolute ball this Sunday and greener pastures this coming week, boys.
Yeah. Stay green, guys. Thank you guys for listening. If you guys love our content and you guys love everything that we've been doing recently, please give us that 5 stars at the bottom of the Apple Podcast page, and we will see you Wednesday.